welcome to everybody. Just a few housekeeping things. We are going to be meeting here from now till 1 o'clock. Then we adjourn for lunch and then we reconvene at 10 past 3 till about 10 past 4, plus 4 in committee room 4B454. The housekeeping session is another day. I think the first item on the agenda is for us to try and get a short list of candidates for the NDDA. I'm told that there are four vacancies, am I right?
Four vacancies?
I'm sure you will inform
us. Okay, there are four vacancies. And we put a short list of number of people. We've had 23 TVs. I've just been informed by the staff now that two TVs came in late.
We just accepted reading.
And I've indicated that no, we are not going to be accepting late TVs.
Okay.
Because really, I mean, it's not fair that we have an outset and circulator team that try and read them and short it. A little late, they're late. We've got a sufficient pool for people to take short this TV. With those few sort of introductory comments, maybe we should very open to discussion. I don't know how many names do we want to shortlist, keeping in mind that there are cost implications for the committee. Every time we bring people down here, we put a paper in slides, etc. And I also don't want us to have a very long list of names to interview because the program is very, very tight. And I don't want us to interview all the committee either. So if we can really come to a reasonable figure, a number of people that we want to shortlist, and then we can try and select a name. AMC, we have a proposal for us, a name, so the DA. No other parties here today.
AMC,
we have a proposal. How many names to shortlist? Mr. Sukumaru?
I considering the fact that it's only four vacancies, it would make sense for us to have less than 10 candidates, apart from the fact that we incur more costs. But if we do thorough screening, we shouldn't really have more than 10. So I propose that we should have 8.
Why?
We
got 18.
I'll
ask
won't be exactly the same, so we might end up with 10.
No, but we must struggle to get eight. Really, I don't want to bring people down here just for the sake of it.
No, I'm all for it.
I really think we've got TVs, we must select carefully and try and keep it to eight.
Yeah.
I've got 7. If you have 6, that's fine with me.
Let me say that I have always opposed these long, long interview lists for the so-called sake of inclusivity. It's nonsense. No, I'm all for shortlisting, Jack. It's just in this case, there's a lot of unknown quantities and I found it quite difficult.
All right. Any proposals?
Were you calling the thing?
Let's start with one thing.
I always go first. You always say that and then you come in and say, you can go first.
Mr. Trump?
Sure, you want the names or just the numbers? We all got lists in front of us.
Numbers are fine.
Okay. Number 2. Number 8. Number 9. Number 11. Number 14. 16. 20. And 23. Those are 8, I think it's 8. 2, 4, 6, 8. It's 8 numbers.
Okay, mine is 8. Very similar. I've got 23, 20, 8, 2, 14, 13, 9, 11.
Don't give me that. 13 and 14. He's 14 and
14. I don't know who's this number 16.
And he's got 14 and 14. What is the difference?
It's just 13 years of 14.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's 16.
Maybe.
And number 16, I don't know.
Can you repeat that a little bit slowly so that we get your numbers in? You got
23 is Guy Berger.
Yeah.
20 advocates too low.
Yeah.
8 is Hein Marais.
Yeah.
Proposed by Jaha. Right now. 2 is 8. 2 is Guru Mtibi.
Mm.
14 is someone who looks interesting in the base. 13 is Devon Panay. 9 to see where Linui is. And is, what was the 11?
Mokotso.
Okay.
He was the engineer, the broadcast engineer.
Okay. And then,
he was 11. And 9 was me.
Chandi, ANC. Chandi, the ANC proposal, that was the same numbers, and the members who just checked through this. The proposal number 2, number 4, CV number 5, number 8, number 9, number 10, number 13, 17, and 23. I hope that represents the ANC for this.
Okay, 4, 5, 10, and 17 is what we done. Yeah.
All right, we agree on 2. Can we accept
yeah.
that now?
Yeah.
That's fine. We agree on 8.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yeah.
That's number 2. We agree on 9.
Yes.
We agree on 13.
Yes.
And we agree on 23.
Yes.
How many? 1,
4, 5.
2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to open the discussion now and try and finalize it to 8?
Yeah,
I want to just suggest in terms of process, we could spend a few minutes now and try and finalize it. Alternatively, at the end of today, after we complete all the hearings, you might want to spend 10 to 15 minutes. You would have time to think about things and look at the TVs and confer, etc. And we can finalize it by the end of this afternoon. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
We are here on 5, which I think I already used to start the day, so we really need to go for about 3 more. Okay, so we will then defer the item for the evening. Thank you very much. We can then move on to the next item on the agenda. GCIS. I want to welcome the delegation from GCIS. Are we? I'm waiting for your. Is your number? We finished a little bit earlier than expected because we
shipped
the afternoon. All right. We can ask you to have a second round of coffee while we're waiting for the contact.
What
to receive government information to better their lives, advice to receive from parliamentary committee on communications, and this we welcome always, Chair. Whenever we come here, we do get input about how to improve communication, and then also learning from the communication partners that we'll be telling about this morning. Outline of the presentation covers the following areas: what you've done to expand access to government information, the initiatives that we've taken to build communication partnerships, how we have actually worked very hard to improve the performance of the government communication system, a little bit on administration, financial management, human resources, and then conclude. So let's get cracking then. Firstly, expanding access to government information. As you know, the key government program of action is basically announced to the nation by the president in the State of the Nation address. And what we did this year was to basically publish 5 million simplified versions of the program of action as announced by the president in all official languages, 3 million of which were distributed as inserts in the Vuvuzela magazine. We also did a 5-part radio drama series, which was in all South African official languages except in English, because the speech was delivered in English. And the 5-episode short story was published in various newspapers to make sure that as many South Africans as possible had access. What we're also finding quite interesting is that the awareness generally of the State of the Nation address is actually increasing. As you can see, that graph chair is showing you that, in fact, the number of people who are aware of the State of the Nation address and what it's about and what it says, we're seeing that, in fact, there's an increase there, which is showing that, in fact, we're making progress. Vuvuzela, the government magazine of the Scottish Day, is proving to be extremely popular, Chair. Demand is clearly surpassing the 1.2 million copies that we were distributing. We're now registered with ADC, which is basically a tool. ADC stands for Audit Bureau of Circulation, which basically will assist us in coming out with accurate figures of the 1.2 million copies we distribute, how many millions of people are actually reading that publication. But the public response is very clear that it is meeting their needs in providing information on economic and other opportunities. And the public is really appreciating the real stories of people that we tell via Vuvuzela. And initial research that was done is indicating that, in fact, of the 8.6 million copies that we distributed, the number of people who are seeing and also accessing the magazine is actually growing extensively over the past couple of years. And what we're promoting, Chair, is that when people read the document or the magazine, they must pass it on to other people. So if it's delivered in House A, we encourage people in that house to read and pass it on to their next door neighbors. And that's why you see that, in fact, in terms of numbers we've seen it and numbers we've accessed it, we're really talking in millions, huge millions here. So we're quite excited and pleased with this initiative. Second economy initiative, as we said to the committee in the previous presentation, we've got a major initiative that is supported by DGs who are part of the economic cluster, which is basically a number of departments pooling resources together, making sure that we publish information on second economy initiatives, and that initiative is moving quite well. We're already implementing that in this year as well. So the new edition of the co-presentation, which is disseminated through workshops and the television series Azish Care, not MDDA interrupting my presentation. But yeah, this is something that we're very proud of, Chair. So it's a sharper initiative, very unique in the sense that different departments come together, put the full resources, and make sure that we communicate to communities about the second economy opportunities that exist. The next key point is expanding access to government information using the Tsutong Service Centers as key points. The Tsutong Service Centers, formerly known as multi-purpose community centers, are actually proving to be very essential platforms of making sure that our communities out there receive information on what is happening in government. So at this stage, By the end of the financial year, we had 96 operational centers and we're quite proud of that. And these citizen service centers are becoming essential information hubs that support local distribution points. So we find that, in fact, in citizen service centers, information is distributed, and when people want to know what is happening in government in a key, number of key areas, they know where to go. But it's supplemented by also the use of clinics, hospitals, shops, to also reach diverse communities and in different areas. We're pleased to also inform the committee that the Department of Communication named its 900 citizen post office the Tsutong Post Office. Post offices, Tsutong Post Office. Yes, that's what they call it. So they call it a Tsutong Post Office, which is in fact in support of our initiative to use this Tsutong Service Center. Even though members of the committee know about this initiative, so we don't have to say much, Chair, except to say that individuals are proving to be quite essential platforms for giving our communities the opportunity to hold government accountable, but also give government the opportunity to communicate on a face-to-face basis with communities. And it's something that is, we still consider very unique in the world, and it's something that we think needs to grow as we move on. One is another platform that we use to disseminate information about government activities, policies, but what's important about World News, Chair, is that it's not just government news that is included on World News. It's generally news about South Africa. A number of players globally are beginning to use World News as a source of information about what's happening in the country, and it's proving to be something very close to what one may call a news agency, a government news agency. We're giving examples of countries that are already on a regular basis starting to use World News as a source of information because they know that in fact they get reliable information from World News. Another important initiative of making sure that people have access to government information is the portal that we're running on behalf of government. We're pleased to indicate that in fact at this stage all official languages, the website now has information in all the 11 official languages. Members who were here in the last presentation will recall that we're still, I think we're around 7 or 8 languages, but now we've achieved the total 11 languages. So essentially, Chair, we'd invite members of the committee, if you need information on any aspect of government, this is your point of entry. And it's proving to be very useful. At this stage, approximately 1,640 documents are on the site. We've got 5,634 speeches, a number which is up from 5,000 in the previous financial year. Total usage of the site, 2.6 million hits in the previous financial year. So we're quite excited that in fact this is a platform that is increasingly being used by a lot of people to access information. The next thing, very quickly, Chair, is essentially the partnerships that were put in place to make sure that we can advance the goals of giving information, but also making sure that we work in collaboration with a number of stakeholders in the country. And it's premised on the understanding that the work of government or the work of the country is not something that needs to be left entirely to government. So three essential partnerships have been put in place. The first one being the 2010 Communication Partnership. The next key one being the Partnership on HIV and AIDS and 16 Days of Activism. This is essentially areas where government, or particularly UCF, is working with communicators in all these three sectors to make sure that there is common messages that are articulated by all the players to the public about what these initiatives are essentially about. The HIV and AIDS partnership, for instance, we're working very closely with communicators in SANEC to make sure that the country as a whole, all key players, government, business, civil society, communicate a common message to the public about the work that needs to be done on HIV and AIDS. And the same approach is working quite effectively as far as the 16 days of activism for no violence against women and children, and its next phase, which is 365 days of the program,
to make sure that we all fight against abuse of women and children in our society. So, another major area of work is in the partnership in the industry, that is the marketing, advertising and communication industry. We're pleased to indicate that Chair will make good progress. As far as the draft charter and the scorecard is concerned, all the major stakeholders have agreed on the charter and the scorecard. The next phase is basically the handing over of the scorecard and the charter to the DCI for finalization. But I think that we're making tremendous progress. We're also taking practical steps to promote equity in the industry and also educating government communicators on what are the best practices for procurement of advertising services from BEE players in the country. The next area of work is promoting effective and equitable ad spend by government in the center. And as part of our contribution to transformation and equity in the distribution of government advertising expenditure, we have actually introduced and we're managing what we call the media bulk buying facility, where as government, as GCIS, were procuring media on behalf of all government or most government departments, with a view to making sure that we can negotiate better prices, better discounts if we actually buy in bulk through this service. Progress in this area is moving a bit slow, but we're starting to see some progress where more and more government departments are coming on board and saying they will want to buy media through the facility that we are using. We're also promoting a multimedia approach to making sure that we communicate better to all sectors of our community. And in this regard, Chair, we thought we should just indicate that, in fact, we are promoting the use of all forms of media. Because in most cases, what we found was that government department found it easier to just use commercial media for advertising and communicating messages. And what we're promoting is the use of different platforms to make sure that when there's a particular message we want to communicate to communities, we firstly understand what the target audience is, which is the most appropriate platform, and making sure that, in fact, the recipients of the message are the correct ones as per the research that we've conducted. And our indications are that, in fact, people in different sectors of society have their own preferred platform for receiving messages or information from government. A classical example, for instance, would be this slide, which is indicating the various platforms that people prefer to receive government information. Now, you will see that, in fact, top right there are the knock and drop at home. The research is telling us that, in fact, if one is the most effective way of reaching communities on particular messages, that will be the most effective method that we use. The least preferred method of receiving government information was the pension grant and pay funds. But what's also important is that we're finding that different provinces are giving different senses of which platforms are more preferred. So, for instance, in Limpopo, the most preferred way of receiving government information, the research is telling us that would be the use of schools compared to, for instance, the Free State, where the schools and Northern Cape would be the least preferred method or platform of receiving government information. And the most important point that needs to be understood with this slide is that when government communicators or government departments want to communicate information to the public, they need to do a proper assessment of what is the target audience and what is the most appropriate platform to use to communicate that information. So this was just by the way of information. The next area of work is to improve the performance of the government communication system. Now, in the report, you will see the details of the work we're doing to make sure that we cascade the communication system to all spheres of government. The next task is basically to make sure that we cascade from the system to the local sphere. At this stage, we have provincial core teams that have been put in place. We're working in partnership with SALGA, DCLG, to make sure that we cascade the system to the local level. And by March of 2007, we had established 27 district communication fora, which were already operational, and there were 8 outstanding. And I'm sure that by this point, we have made progress. An important part of the improvement of the communication system, Chair, is the training that we're putting in place. We have a partnership with Unilever, Mandela Rhodes Foundation, and ourselves, and we're running a course at West TNDM, which is training and producing or training up to 40 people per annum coming from the 3 tiers of government to make sure that we can actually increase the skill levels of our communicators. An achievement during the course of the financial year was the creation of the internal communicators forum to make sure that whilst we are focusing extensively on giving information to the public out there, we do not forget the need to communicate to the more than 1.1 million public servants themselves, who can be very important in articulating information to the public. An important area of our work is making sure that we arrange as many media briefings as possible to make sure that government decision makers interact with media and communicate to the public via the media, and we do that through a variety of activities which are, you know, press conferences and media sessions, etc. A lot of work needs to be done there, but the point I should make here, which is not included in the slide, is the need for some kind of a mindset shift in the media, because the biggest frustration I have, or we have at this stage, is that we've got a lot of these activities that are taking place, but progress reports, the progress that we're making as government in improving the lives of people, the good news that we want to communicate, or we often communicate to the media, doesn't always get covered in the media. That's likely because the current media paradigm is that good news is not news at all. So it's only when there's a major crisis or a story about poor delivery or corruption or something like that, that those kinds of stories actually make headlines. And we need to reach a stage where we interact with our media to make sure that, in fact, it's not just the negative stories about government that get covered. They need to make sure that we find ways of articulating good news, progress stories, and those get covered in the media. I think it's a very important challenge that we face. But nonetheless, we do a lot of work in that regard to make sure that there's regular contact between government and government decision makers and the media. The last point, Chair, is the fact that we've reached a point where we think that, in fact, we've been in operation now for about 9 years, and we think the time has come to review the communication system in its totality, to see which areas of our communication system need to be improved and strengthened, and how we can make sure that, in fact, the work of government gets communicated to each and every citizen in the country. So that review is going to be taking place, I think, towards the end of the year, and will go on for quite a number of months with a view to making sure that we can have a much more improved and strengthened communication system. Getting to the most interesting part of the report now, methods of administration and financial management. I'm sure members are quite keen to look at this. Importantly, we have an unqualified report from the AG, once again, something that we need to celebrate with the committee, because you've always raised all the pertinent questions. Importantly, our ability to spend the budget that you allocate to us as Parliament is increasing by the day. In the 06-07 financial year, we were able to spend 99.5% of the budget allocated to us, which again is a major achievement. In the original allocation, we had 288 million rand allocated to us, but the total amount spent was 294. That's largely because in the adjustment budget that was given later in the year, we had these three amounts added to our total budget, which gives you the 294. So 288 original allocation, original budget, the three amounts allocated, it gives you a total of 294 million rand, and we're able to spend 99.5% of that amount. Just a brief highlight on the human resources during the financial year. Our staff complement was at 427. Of those, 2,100, we can say, were people with disabilities against our target of 2%. So we think that we're making a tremendous progress in terms of achieving employment equity in the organization. And those are your other numbers based on in terms of race, gender, etc., etc. So tremendous progress made in that regard as well. Let's conclude by making the following point, that we think that we are fulfilling our mandate in accordance with our strategic plan. Our core mandate is to sustain and strengthen a government communication system, to keep the public informed and build and empower citizenry. We continue to explore and expand the communication platforms, and we think that in fact we are on course to achieve this mandate. We continue to face challenges in cascading an effective communication system, especially to the local government. Yeah. There's a need to accelerate training to make sure that we achieve this goal, and the review of the system will assist in this regard. We also use communication partnerships as a way of expanding access to government information. So, Chairperson, that brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mateko. I normally you're a very cool, relaxed person, but in the last few meetings I could see that you are difficult to use your post there, particularly when the Twitter posts you around the strength of Kukoli and all of that. But I guess that you can only respond to the information to your disposal. And sometimes it becomes difficult for those that question and seem to have more information than you have. Having said that, during the indigenous, the last indigenous in KwaZulu-Natal, the president and noted, there seems to be a lack of interest, particularly from our white citizens who attend these indigenous. In internet specifically, we take so many white attend the one in KwaZulu-Natal. For him to notice that, it means that in some other areas we don't see that. And we try to determine what is the cause, if it's true, what is the cause of that, then we see I would say over-representation. A large group of a certain sector comes and normally, or hardly anybody from the other one comes. For certain people's mind, and it's for all citizens of the country, and we want to encourage everybody to attend and hear from the government, and to stay with the government, to hear from them first. And so, Chairperson, just quickly, just the strong service centers from what I've learned in my constituency in Yesterday, I think the running will be taken over by the local municipality as from next year. One of the concerns is that all the departments that had to take up space there, few of them, this could be some of them, but some of them is not up to scratch, where they will still have their own little office somewhere in the town, but not in the strong service centers. What are you doing around that one? The other one is the strong name, the brand name. The post office seems to have taken up that name as well, and yet we've seen even the post office, and I'm going to raise it for them when they do the annual report, seems not in all areas also to be up to scratch. The risk of you doing great work in terms of this area and them not being up to scratch, but you put down that brand name, or they have become brand name, you know. And lastly, Chairperson, the information, is it possible that you can provide us with information regarding farm workers? They are under tremendous attacks in our outlying area, but I'm talking about information that you don't want them to be kind of fly, easy to read about the rights and that's all of that. This GKM officer is doing great work to provide basically everything, but some of this information is not available, so when you do go out to communicate to people about their rights and how to exercise their rights, and that seems to be lacking. Coupled to that, your limited resources allows you, I think, only 1,500 prints of something that has been up now. The book is in there. Great read. The only problem is there's not enough in Brian available.
I've seen in the Southern Cape, I've been to basically every library. I take in one copy and nothing else. So could you, then also I know it's expensive, could you make sure that, particularly the libraries in terms of Braille, test copies are also available to them? Thank you.
Thank you very much. What can you hold on? Because I think there's quite a lot of questions here. Maybe you could respond then.
Okay, maybe so.
Very careful to me, yes, indeed, is, and these are over time, when we do the post and these are research, we established a few things, and the point was people are raising that it has to do largely with the venues that we were picking, which might not. What number? Okay, yeah. It's trust. It's a trust.
No comment.
It's working. We can't really. I was saying that we have already done a post in legal research to establish precisely why it is not inclusive. One of the things that had come up was the venue. Other racial groups, particularly white racial groups, were saying the venues that we're selecting were actually quite inconvenient, obviously because of the legal capacity. And the KZN one was actually the second one. The first one that was a very inclusive was the one in Picture Tip last in 2005, where we actually identified a venue which we could actually get more racial cohesive. The other element was the element of youth. Young people were saying that isn't these are tending to focus a lot on elderly people. To that extent, we're trying to definitely even have sectoral individual. And you'll notice that in some of the programs, we do actually identify programs that target young people. Example is a sectoral individual where we had an individual of the young farmers in the first stage. So we are definitely improving in that respect. We are also aware that our advertising and organization should try and address other racial groups and actually address them. And we can diversify so that in all of this, we are thinking next year that we're going to try and deliver it in Diesel and including it, not only wait for the week, the national week, in between the weeks, we should actually do the travel in Diesel where we can include business, women, young people, as well as people living with disabilities. So we're learning quite a lot as we go on with it because we definitely are aware that it has to attract also our people.
Just to add back, Mr. Chair, I think this is an important question because it doesn't just apply to e-invisible. It also, if you look at, for instance, when we're celebrating national holidays as a nation, I don't think that we see enough white South Africans participating in a lot of these activities. So as Bay is saying, I think that we need to do research because these events, when they are organized, they are meant for all South Africans, not just black South Africans. And the challenge facing government is to find those platforms that will make it possible for us to reach all South Africans irrespective of race. But the challenge facing, in my view, white South Africans is also for them to begin to see themselves as part of this nation and participate in community activities, participate in government activities so that they can also begin to shape the nature of South Africa that we're trying to build. So I think that is a challenge facing, yes, government, but also the white community. I'm going to ask Daly to comment on the question on Tucson Civic Center.
The question about Tucson Civic Center run by local municipalities, what we did last year was the review of all the existing Tucson Civic Centers just to do an analysis. And we found that different centers from different provinces are run differently. And we realized that if this program is about national, provincial, and local government, the integratedness of government is best, the best location to manage them would be the municipalities, because anyway, the funding for building these centers come from municipal infrastructure grants, and that are run by municipalities. But one other thing that we did was to say in the review was to also do an analysis and check what the challenges are and request encourage municipalities also to ask for more money to expand and extend so that more departments can come in. That's what we have been doing. About the brand name, I think you're very right, Mr. Professor. If the post offices are not going to be working well, it's going to compromise the work that we have done. Mara, we are engaging with them about also what is it that needs to be done to make sure that there is a convergence about the work that we are doing. At the moment, anyway, post offices are used as distribution points. So it actually extends the work of the Chiso Service Centers. Regarding information for farm workers, our communication officers all over the country do actually access and work with the farm workers to try to give them information. I'm not so sure if there are some problems. I know in some areas it's difficult to access the areas, but they do engage them, and the farm workers do come to them if they have some complaints around information or support. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, just to complete, there's a question about, in fact, not a question, a suggestion that we increase the Braille participation of women as well. We give that commitment. We'll increase that number substantially when we come back here. But I think it's an important issue. Thank you.
Chair, thank you, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, I'm well known not to make political statements or remarks at the solo meetings, but today I'm going to do so. And I'm doing it in the spirit of maybe offering some advice in terms of research when you talk about the celebration of National Holidays and the Imbizos. And I agree that the GCIS and government have a lot of work to do to make the whole thing inclusive. The remark is more or less the following. I do not need to be a supporter or a member of the governing party to be inclusive in this nation of ours. I do not regard myself as outside of the nation. And so does a large number of all people in this country. I would suggest that either GCIS must get some way, when I'm referring to Imbizos and national events, to either monitor the speeches of the keynote addressees or the feeling of the whole thing, because I do encourage my councillors and my constituents to attend Imbizos and attend these things, and often I get remarks at other people as well. And it's not a white, non-white issue, it's an issue of what people experience. And often there's a remark that those events are nothing but governing party festival, propaganda, discussion, and that is very difficult to understand that. It's very difficult to, at such events, to draw a proper line between a political party event and a government information event or celebration event. So, just against that background, I think we should consider those things, because I would very much like to see all of us attending all these things. But we need to feel welcome, and I'm not saying that I never felt unwelcome, but the emphasis, in particular where you have addresses by mayors or district mayors and local government politicians, which is very much an ANC roadshow instead of a government report back. And I'm saying this with respect, and I'm saying it in a very positive way. I'm not attacking party politics or attacking these things. All I'm saying is what I personally experience and what gets reported to me by positive people, people who are part of this country, always want to be part of this country. So that is my just a side remark, as I said, in terms of possible research. I've got a number of just remarks and one or two questions on this, and I'm going to go down the slides as we started. I'm personally of the opinion that the GCIS is offering a world-class, first-class service to the people of our country. In a country of ours, with the background where we came from, as well as the vast majority of our people living in areas where they do not have always proper access to information and to those type of communications, it's very important what GCIS does. Their main job is to inform our people about services that are available from government, to assist them, and also to inform them how to access those services. And if I listen to the presentation, And the good thing about this presentation is that it is on a yearly basis, it's a follow on and report back from the previous presentation. And I appreciate that. You reported back on what happened since our last presentation. I picked it up in any case as I go through the things. And I think you do a very good job in terms of empowering that vast majority of our people lacking accessibility service or lacking information. As I go down, I agree with the Braille copies, but I also want to say good for you that you even got this far with the 600. I agree we need more, but this is a wonderful start. As is the rollout of the Tucson service centers and the piggybacking on the post office in terms of accessibility. World News is a very good initiative. All the more our people are able to get online and get access to these things. And that's once again why I said that we're offering a first-class service, because we use all available means from a Tucson center to the World Wide Web. Often we get here when we have to ask further questions as to some promises made in the past that never realized. So good for you that we do have the official language now in your Butterfield Gateway portal. Thanks for that. And I think Parliament can actually take a lesson from that in terms of communicating to all the people of our country with the difficulty of all our languages. So in terms of the disabilities, once again, the rest is also on target, and once again, they use an example. Let me get to finances, finance management, and audit general report. We in Parliament over the last number of years became so used to qualified audit reports from almost all departments that we actually, in our own mindset, are coming into a position that we want to applaud every time there's an unqualified report. I will do so today. More important for me is the remark unqualified report from Auditor General again, because that's the way it should be. And I think that we as members of Parliament should really want to see that, with the exception of one or two, there should be unqualified reports every year from every department. Once again, you're leading in that way. I'm happy with your financial statements and all the information there. Just one question, Chair. When I look at page 119 of your annual report, 5.5, that's irrecoverable amounts written off. And there's debt in respect of the former CEO, Mr. S. Kotane, of 1.8 million rand, in excess of 1.8 million rand, that is now being written off. Can I just ask that you just quickly refresh our minds, our memories, how that debt was incurred? And also, I would like to know if any money, what was the amount of the original debt, and if any money has been paid back to government, because at the end of everything, it is taxpayers' money we're talking about. If during this period of indebtedness, if any amounts have been paid, or if this is still the initial debt. And also maybe some indication of why it was impossible for government, well, first of all, how the debt was incurred. It's difficult for me to understand how a CEO can, when he leave a department, owe them in excess of 1.8 million rand, but also why was there no success in recovering this debt. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Media, that was the first one from the official opposition. Today is really in a good mood.
Okay. Baby to respond, or this baby. By default, by Pumla will deal with the financial question.
Through you, Chairperson. Thank you indeed for your observations from the member. What you've been saying is correct indeed, that the legal platform should never be used as a platform of the party. And in fact, in the past 5 years, they have never been. just to share with the community how we actually put together the program. We encourage that the province that hosts, let's say in particular the presidency, would send us sectoral programs, and these programs must be driven by a government overarching program. And this could be, for an example, a growth and development climate policy or program of that very province. So we, and also I think what is also important is that we discourage any stitches at the individual, because it is a platform where communities have to be talking to government and holding government responsible and assessing that government is doing their work. So in all of the work that is done, as this is coordinating both the national health individual as well as the president individual, we've made it quite clear to all councillors, irrespective of the party they come from, that when they use that platform and they come to it, it is a platform of government and it stays addressing the program of government. So clearly the fears or the issues that have been raised by the member should not arise, and the GCR is working to make sure that whatever comes out of that is directly related to the program of government, particularly service delivery. And also it is a platform where we forge partnerships to accelerate the delivery of government addressing poverty in this country. So it's very, very clear and quite aware that platform can sometimes be abused, but it has never been abused, because in the manner in which we organize it, we ensure that it is not politically partisan at all. Where the councillors play a role to the chair is where they have to explain to people as to how far have they actually delivered what they have promised to. Therefore, they then come out, they have to address issues of IDPs, any local economic development that they have done, any commitments that are done by the president in the discrimination address and the program of action, and to actually say to what it is that they have done to fulfill or to meet the targets that have been set in the program of action of government. So it's clearly a government platform.
Okay, Fumla, we've got another question.
I'm going to try and explain. I hope I'll still remember all the facts, but because I think this debt comes as far back as 1998. But I think it was an expense that was procuring the printing of the annual report of the then state president. The amount was meant to have been about 2.8, but because it didn't go through the government printing works, it then resulted in an over expenditure. This is actually the 1.8 is the difference of the amount that was paid for having gone outside of the government printer. So when we calculated, I think the printing would have amounted to about 2.8, and I think the printing ended up with an outside company resulting in about 3 point something. So what then happened is that the whole process went through parliament, and the portion where the printing of the work actually did happen, I think Parliament gave the condonement of that portion, and it then advised that the 1.8 should actually be pursued, which was done through the Department of Justice. And I think all measures were done, and on an annual basis, I think we were briefing Parliament. And as a result, I think this debt, as we were not able to recover the money from Mr. Kotane and with the help of Department of Justice, we then wrote back to Parliament because it was beginning to accumulate interest because we were unable to recover the money from Mr. Kotane. And the judgment was given, I think it's a 8 years judgment, and we then wrote, and what the portfolio, the scorecard actually ruled after a while when we were raising it as a concern, because it was continuously accumulating interest, they then gave a permission to write it off, but maintaining the 30-year judgment against Mr. Kotane. And it was on the basis of that this transaction was written off with the 1.8, which is actually the difference. But the portion where the printing actually did happen, I think it was for me. Thanks.
Okay.
Follow up on this particular one. Okay, the first one, and then Chair, it's not so much a follow up, but a part of the question that I just need, a part of the answer that didn't address a part of my question. This former CEO, to really hold a chief executive officer accountable for a certain portion is a serious matter. I mean, it happens to Parliament. But this person, subsequent since he left the employment, various other employments. I mean, he was never unemployed. I did ask if any money has been recovered, and if not, so why not? Even a some payment. In other words, did he ever pay a cent back, or not? If not, why not? If he was employed, was he sequestrated, or what happened in terms of that?
I think as far as I recall, which was a matter that was being pursued by the Department of Justice, they had indicated to us all the attempts were made to recover. In fact, at some point, they even tried to get it through his bank, and they were not able to do that, and they were informed that he was not working. And I think that's the information we were getting, that he actually was not working, and they were not able to recover the funds.
What is that you measure there? Is it the number? Is it the questions that are asked there? What is it that when you are evaluating at the end of the day, you say that you were successful? What is it? And the second question is, taking into account the history of our South Africa, it seems a well-known secret that our government gets the majority support from the black community. And not saying that we are not supported by the white people. I mean, we do know that, but I'm saying the majority. What is that the CCIF is doing to get to the white or penetrate to the white community to market the government policy, try and show these people that this government is the government of the people, not the government of the ANC, as they would say that, or government of certain people. Are there extra measures that you are taking as the GCIS to make sure that we win over more people to understand and support the government?
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
The main thing that you had mentioned some time ago. I want to ask about the effort that the GCI has made in trying to bring up the issue why in the second economy. I see also in the introduction by the chief executive that they are trying very hard also to reach the requirements of the ASCISA. But I'm not sure, that's what I want to know. Where are their targets? Which areas do they target? I'm thinking because I see things which I'm write down and so that's why I want to know. Last time we had our women's parliament, I was very much taken aback by the questions that came from the weekend. The people who came here were from business, and some of them were from churches, and some were from women's formation. But seemingly, it was, you know, when we spoke about the office of the Sacred of Fulbright, it was like it's a big story for them. They don't know what is that, what is the office of the Sacred of Fulbright doing. And I can go on and on, they don't know what the brain went and find them, because as I was thinking about it, I don't see, you know, structures like the office of the Sacred of Fulbright. I would like to know actually what you said, the CIA was thinking about starting the
relationship. Thank you. Oh, yes, thank you. if I may, the matter of the writing off of the money, which I wasn't going to address, may I just, in view of the information we received, that justice in their pursuit of Mr. Kutani, couldn't recover money because he didn't appear to be employed. That's the interest sake. If you look at his CV, he was the head of the old SAC, the old DGI, until March of 97. Then in March 98, up until December 99, he was the CEO of Lemisa. After that, in as much as one can track, in 99 he had a general dealer's shop in Mokopane. Then taught at Pretoria Technic Fund from 2005 to 2006 and joined the South African Air Force Reserve in Pretoria from July 2006 to then. I'm not sure that one should condone this writing off, is what I'm saying. So the questions I wanted to raise. The Auditor General has done some of his performance auditing, which we hope will evolve into a whole new field of auditing. It's something he can't do for most departments because most departments are not in a state of readiness, to put it politely, for checking up on performance. In the case of DCIE, on the page 94 of the annual report, he points out that there are some discrepancies, and we're talking about performance management, not finance. Some discrepancies in the number of outputs per objective under programs 3, 4, and 5. And I wondered whether anyone might just like to comment on that. I've looked at them, and look at your page 35 of the annual report. Under that particular program, what he means when he says there's a discrepancy. Under that program, for example, your target was to put up 6 issues of Gua on the website. In fact, it's only 3 went up on the website. I wouldn't have thought this was not a serious matter in the world. But there are others. The number of media briefings by the President was supposed to number 2. And in fact, he appears during this particular reporting year to have briefed the media only once after the mid-year cabinet report in July of 2006. Those are the kinds of descriptions you pointed to, and you will no doubt want to just give us an answer, which I don't think is going to reveal any great problem. I wanted to ask you about what has potentially always been the problem in the work of the minister and this department, and now to me does seem to be coming to a head. This ministry and this department has always made it part of its brief to look at the media environment, right? The words you use in this case this year, under your corporate strategy on page 9, is to say that the DCIS is at the forefront of analysis of the communication environment to identify initiatives to take to enhance the work of government. Now, the danger has always been that government would, in fact, start massaging the media environment so that it becomes easier to enhance the views of its work. Now, and this year, we have a very difficult situation arising, and I want to ask you about the concrete examples where this minister, this department has been visibly involved. There seems to be the danger, a very concrete one, of the introduction of old-fashioned censorship, but of a kind even worse than we've ever had in the Ottoman, the propaganda censorship. And every time the media and Senate discusses that it is with this particular minister, this department, right? I was astounded to see that after the passage of that bill through the National Assembly and when it was heading for the NCOP, that the minister held a meeting with Senate on this bill. Since when do you, in the middle of a parliamentary process, here's the phrasing where the executive, which is a completely different arm of state and which has no jurisdiction over the legislative arm of state, which is ours. And when you see him then meeting with outsiders on a bill about which they are worried, we are worried, South Africa is worried, but discussing with Sanef and the print media and NASA, whatever they call themselves, and making the proposal which I read about, that there are two teams of lawyers who sit and look at this bill. This certainly the bill is problematic. But what is going on here when a department and a minister intrude on the parliamentary committee? And it is also, so there's a concrete example for you, but this minister, this department, appears to have had some sort of direct involvement in a piece of law which is profoundly problematic and will go to the constitutional court. And if that is an example of analysis of the media environment and the initiatives to enhance the work of government, then heaven help us. And the other concrete example, of course, is that the minister threatening not once but frequently to withhold advertising from the Sunday Times. It is one of the jobs of the DCIS to do media ad placement, which it has done in this reporting year for 21 departments. That matter is reported on page 42. And we've now heard the minister, Issel Farhad, more than once, as I say, threatening to withhold advertising from the Sunday Times. And I'd like your comment on such an extreme measure, which clearly does not serve the people who read the government as advertisements, nor does it serve the government department. It doesn't serve. It doesn't do the job that the DCIS is supposed to do when you start withholding advertising from the biggest paper in the country. And I ask you, in so many words, is there a punitive executive agenda at work? The Sunday Times and the government are at loggerheads. We all know that. And this, I use specifically the concrete examples of where this minister, this department, have acted in this field. Lastly, if this ministry or this department had anything to do with the question of the regulation of the print media, which we all see is up for discussion at Polokwane, then we'd like to know that, please. Are they involved in the proposal that there should be regulation? No, we'd like to know. It's a terribly serious matter. And then just lastly, what Honourable Randy said to Mr. Maseko, our old colleague, I thought was exactly right. That people did have the impression that he was not himself informed or briefed when he spoke publicly about the matter of the suspension of the Director of National Prosecution. And that in itself is such a fundamentally problematic step, or the implications are so very grave. But if he would feel like responding to that, I'd be interested, because he spoke, I thought, eloquently on the need for clarity on the message. All government communicators should understand what the message is, and convey it in one voice, as it were. Now, where does a situation like this leave him? I mean, if he wasn't properly informed, where does it leave him?
Kick off with the questions on Zimbabwe.
Chair, it's amazing that this is actually the first time we've heard so many questions around Zimbabwe. Can I just address the issue of impact? That I think we should look at it at three levels. Because it is a, like I was saying, a platform where government has to account and also show that it is fulfilling its mandate. As a result, at every individual, the three spheres of government, local government, provincial and national, have to take on the responsibilities that they have to. That is the reason why every vendor of Indigo has to have representatives from local council, province, and national. It is clear that it is not possible for national ministers to attend an Indigo and think that they'll take the issues back to Pretoria and deal with it. As a result, how we assess this is at the point in time, issues are disaggregated and given directly to the NECs and the local government that is responsible to implement. Subsequent to that, they have to report on those particular areas. At the national level, the national departments have to actually take on issues that are raised. I'll give a classical example. Over 3 years, communities complained that the DTI should actually be having offices in province. And they were complaining primarily because there was no access for them, quick access to cooler, to speaker, and a whole lot of programs that are supposed to support them. Subsequent to the Zimbigo and our assessment of Zimbigo, the DTI had to establish an agency called SPIA. That was as a result of the infrastructure problems. And it shows that at the end of at least not all of the things that come out of Zimbigo are addressed immediately and quickly, but efforts are made to do that. The second example I can give is that over quite a while, communities have been complaining. We're doing work around that area, much has been not succeeding quite well. The development of community workers was as a result of people going around, ministers going around, and people saying, we would like to have people who come to us to give us information of government. I must say, it's a drop in an ocean, but actually it's an effort of government to establish community development workers, where they are from, where they're working well, they're working extremely well with those communities. And that is an example. So the world is certain things that are of national policy imperative that cannot be adjusted in these, and these will be referred back to the national office. And the work of GCI is to coordinate that information and take it back to the national offices. You will ask how we monitor that national departments are monitoring. We're not perfect in that regard, and that's an area that needs to be refined. Ideally, what has to happen is once the national departments have got reports from an individual forum, they're supposed to follow through those issues. And that is an area of weakness, which we are working on. As a result, GCI has established an individual database, which we hope over time will be interactive. Wherever the premier or the NEC will be sitting, they'll be able to monitor any particular issue that came up from individual, and that's how far we go. I'm sorry, you asked about the second economy, and I will address that too. The work of GCI is to communicate so that government is able to respond when the need comes, when the demands come from people for government to deliver. In this second economy, it is the third year that we are pulling together different second economy programs in the department, and that initiative, as the CEO was referring to, was started by the cluster of the economic cluster on investment and employment, DGs, who are contributing into the third year now, money from their communication budget for us to pull together programs that are lying in those departments to communicate them. In as far as implementation, yes, it is slow, but it is penetrating. And we have now included in the campaign that we're going to be embarking on this year a tracking tool where we're going to assess how far people are actually getting this information. But maybe we should all agree, like I think the members of the community do know, honorable members, that GCI cannot communicate alone. So the work that we do of coordinating communication is to also try and decatalyze so that those departments that have to communicate that their programs actually are pushed to communicate. So it's more of a collective way of approaching communication, making people be access those programs. Quickly, the campaign that we're embarking on is the ones that we've led for 2 years now. And it is really to prop up communication on certain economic opportunities and how to access them. And the challenge is indeed whether to people access those programs, and when they do access them, do they get their life changed? And in our view, that's a long-term objective, which over time will be monitored, and as government pulls together to work together in cluster approaches, one as DCI, we feel that we'll reach more and more people who can benefit from this program.
Okay, thanks. The next question was about measures we're putting in place to make sure that we reach out to the white community in particular. I think it is indeed an important question, and I would say that we actually need to do a bit more work, more research, as you said, to understand what are the most appropriate platforms. Because it may very well be that we might have to adopt different approaches for different communities with the same objective, and that is to giving out information. Because the issue is that, as GISA, as our primary mandate is to make sure that government information is accessed and given out to all sectors of our population, colored, Indian, African, and white. And if indications are that, in fact, a certain percentage of our population is not accessing the information or is not participating in national activities, I think that becomes quite a challenge that needs to be looked at. I can refer you to a discussion which took place at the Cabinet Lakota about the need for measures to be put in place to build what was termed then social cohesion. That is, making all South Africans to feel that they are part of this nation, and that they see this government as government of all South Africans, irrespective of race. So a lot of work still needs to be done in that regard, and accept it as a key challenge. By making sure that all government information is available in all languages and with different platforms, so you could say that the space is there. The challenge is to make sure that all South Africans also can take advantage of the opportunities that we're presenting through your radio program, your TV program, your internet, etc. For instance, somebody could argue that we also have a major challenge as government to reach out to young people in this country. So, what is the best way to make sure that we reach out to young people of all races? What do we need to do? Maybe the next phase of a communication platform could be to explore the use of cell phones as a way to reach out to young South Africans. So I think that there's a bit of research that needs to be done. Member Kumasi, your first question about writing off the Kotane debt, based on the CV that you read there. What we need to just bring to the attention of the committee is that this matter served before this committee, it went to SCOPA. The Department of Justice was actually given the task to take the matter forward, because we're just a communication outfit. So
you have to not do.
Yeah, so we're just a communication outfit, so we don't have the capacity to chase individuals. So the relevant department is Justice. So the matter served before SCOPA, it was discussed before my time, during my time, hopefully not after my time. But there was a resolution which was passed by SCOPA, which went to Parliament. And Parliament adopted the resolution to say this debt must be written off, and that all reasonable steps were taken to recover the debt, and Parliament approved it. So, but it's still appearing
in our... I see, in fact, the finance bill was signed by 331 March 2007.
Yeah.
So the deed is done, right?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. The next question is, with regard to performance auditing, we'll accept your comments. It is true that, in fact, there are indeed, maybe discrepancy is a bit of a strong word, but there are, I think, major challenges that we still face. The fact that in most government departments, your strategic planning, your budget put on the other side, and there's a problem about making sure that you align your plans to your budget, but at the same time, make sure that your performance evaluation system can make sure that you monitor performance based on the plan that is submitted to Parliament. And this is what the AG is picking up, and I think that we have our performance review on a quarterly basis to make sure that managers are called upon to account for their plans and make sure that money is spent accordingly. So this is an important challenge, but we will take on board and make sure that, in fact, our activities and expenditure is directly linked to the targets that we set ourselves. So we thank you for bringing this to our attention. the issue of massaging the media, no, it's not massaging the media member, but the key challenge is what we're trying to articulate in our program is that we need to create a climate where there is a better relationship between government communicators and the media, because we're finding that from time to time there's an element of hostility between government communicators and the media. We hold workshops with the media to understand what are their issues with government. We talk to government communicators, and what becomes very clear to us is that government people do not have good working relations with the media, and that's actually hampering the need for information. Your media people will complain that we can't get hold of government communicators, we don't know who they are, etc., etc. So our view, which is accepted by the media, is that you need to create a climate, an environment where it is possible for a journalist to call a government communicator to say, we're looking for this information. Get rid of the hostility that sometimes exists between media and government people. And that, in our view, is not amounting to massaging the media, but it's creating open lines of communication, creating a platform for us as government communicators to give information to the media, and for the media to feel that they can actually talk to us if they need information about what is happening in government. So it is nothing to do with censorship or even massaging the media. You asked a lot of questions that, in my view, should be directed to the minister, who I'm sure would be more than willing to answer them. But I can just indicate to you that, for instance, you are raising a valid point about GCIS and the minister interacting with SANEF at the time when the bill was present before Parliament. This was as a result of a request for discussions by SANEF. And as government, our view was that, yes, we respect the processes that are taking place in Parliament, but at the same time, we needed to make sure that the media feel that there is an opportunity where they can actually talk directly to the executive while the bill was actually taking place in Parliament. But the minister and the government delegation made it very clear to Parliament that as the executive, we cannot dictate to the legislature about what the final content should be of the deal. And we said SANEF must actually go and make presentations directly to Parliament. So all the presentations that SANEF has been making and all the other players as well to Parliament were as a result of our advice to government to say go and talk to Parliament directly if you have major concerns. But our view was that the issues were so sensitive in nature that it was not going to be sensible or prudent for us to just shut our doors as executive simply because the matter was appearing before Parliament. But we fully respect the right of legislature to deal with matters of legislation without any interference from the executive. The issue of a minister threatening to withdraw advertising from Sunday Times, yes, the minister has made this public, he has made it very clear that in his view, there should not be government advertising in the Sunday Times, but in the very same context, he has made it very clear that this is not a government position, government-wide position. It is his view as a minister. Our view is that basically the platforms that we use for advertising and communication, communicating messages must basically be based on this life that you're seeing. That as government, we must sit down and say, what is our target audience? What is the most effective way of communicating this particular message? Is it print media? Is it through inserts? Is it knock and drops, etc., etc.? And make strategies. And if it's clear that we're targeting a particular section or set of our population, which reads the Sunday Times, and I'm sure that's something that can be looked at. But if we have a message, for instance, to communicate to elephants 1 to 3, it may not make sense to advertise in the Sunday Times. Maybe the most viable newspaper could be the Sun newspaper, for example. So is that kind of assessment, research-based analysis that needs to be looked at? Well, I'm sure it's always difficult to separate politics from anything. Yeah. I think it's an important point we try to clarify. But I'm sure if there's a direct question to the minister, it needs to be sent to him and he can deal with it.
Or we can invite him in to Okay. Members must you then said there's a punitive aggressive agenda against the Sunday Times. That's not not true. There isn't any punitive agenda against the Sunday Times. We continue to have open and frank discussions and relationships with all media. The Sunday Times editor attends all meetings between Sunday Times and government, and I can certainly say that there isn't a government punitive agenda against Sunday Times or any particular newspaper. Regulations of print media in Limpopo, unfortunately, this is a political question that only the ruling party can answer. SGCIS were not able to answer this question. Whether I was myself when I was answering questions on advocacy colleagues, members, the only time I'm not myself is when I'm flipping. Most of the time I'm
following.
That's
really
not what I said.
We're going to have the last round of questions now.
We do as CCIS provide support to the president, especially programs that fall under our minister. And I think what you're raising, member, is that we will have to investigate and see what type of communication support is necessary so that they are working profiled effectively within the whole context of communication and also the services that they provide in support of women.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I would like to commend the department for the annual report. I'm not used to the department reporting the size, where they put the program output indicators and the quality tracking. Thank you very much for this explanation. However, just one or two questions here. On your research, I can see on page 1 that you have targets and all. But my question would be, you have your own internal research that will come out. You know, as we come to sitting here representing communities from rural areas, where people wouldn't know anything about government. You know, I represent Eshowe. Eshowe is some of the ones there which have no electricity. So, it means the communication there is very poor. They have been through this rural area, the old session. That's my second question. Then, secondly, we'll give you the distribution point of the I have never seen a woman across two galleries until I had to request this setting so my constitution of first officially to contribute in a minimum to those who come in. There are far deeper areas which are far removed. If you could improve on that. The other question would be, I haven't heard you cutting anything on e-government. Can you say something on this? Because the last when it was launched, what is it? And you know, in the process of it, it's been a PRC machine. They don't know what it is for, who knows it, how. And the Department of Science and Technology launched this digital doorway, which they say or especially the government. But the GCI has said anything about it. The last question would be on your human resource. Reading at the best of your report here, your manuscript, and all this booklet here, in case of China or in particular, all the Shusong centers have no center managers, all taken. If all those centers are vacant, and then in one of your reports you have to set your plan to 7 centers, but you manage to build 17 more. If you read that against the background that you have said, you have unspent part, which you could have leave one of those centers would have come to one of my areas. If you could have benefit on that, thank you.
The Yamaha report reflects part of the issues we've raised in the past 3 years, which was based on a strategic development, but none of them are to mitigate for people with disabilities, especially those who cannot see. So the grades come quite handy, but secondly also the issue of the distribution of more focus in Uganda to many far-flung areas that we have raised is quite important. Thirdly, to increase the various platforms of communication for the entire country, and I think that must be quite taken out. Also, we if the MDDA and the IMC could actually move in the same direction as a country president, so that I'm not saying in terms of how they've dealt with their annual report, but I've actually heard there are a number of things that we raised last year that have not been covered even 2 years ago. One, I've asked Mr. Masek and I've said it to Mr. Jones, she said it before. Whether it is correct or is it quite brilliant to have the GCIS CEO as a spokesperson of the cabinet? And I've just asked this question. The question is, because once you've got the GCIS CEO as a spokesperson, now you put him on the spotlight, especially the conservation issues. Now, your CEO spent a lot of time trying to explain things like this. Any time members like, yeah, saying whether the CEO was himself or not. I'm just saying. Because the problem is now, you're putting the CEO in a situation which is a bit cumbersome. Because he would have to spend a lot of his time explaining particular matters that are out of the cabinet, instead of putting a lot of energy into making sure that government communication goes through the entire country. Now, there's a concern that I've raised, and I'm sure I might be putting to the wrong people because it might be a matter that we might want to put to the executive or to communication with government. But I must say that I'm not comfortable with that situation. And I've said it to you, Mr. Mazeko, last year, and I'm saying it now, okay. Now we've got use of recordings, the code, this and that. Now our CEO, which we want him to be rolling out the Shusong centers on the roadshows and everywhere, but now spend a lot of time explaining himself to the media. And unfortunately, sometimes once there's one or two issues, that tends to be controversial. People can touch each other. Like an example, when the new acting MPA director was appointed, he gave two contradictory statements, both to John Orobi or whatever, and to whatever. The following week, they're putting another mampara in the newspaper, I mean, of the country. You know, so I'm saying we have them to see, because at some point, they met when I think of the president, but I was not of the but now, two other things, the last two three things that I thought is a matter that you raised. One was Google and the is it readable? In terms of its style, layout, design, and is it readable or is it attractive to the NFM 6 to 10? Or it would be more attractive to let them 1 to 3 or 1 to 5. Okay, it's an issue that we must have to check, because in some cases, you find it lying around constituent offices, around whatever. If people are reading it, I mean, a lot of people are, whether is it targeting the entire country or other things. The third issue in the segment of Google and Zelle, does that also cover the demographics of the country? Do you distribute it to the DA, IFP, what offices, or PCO? No, wait a minute. I'm not saying to the entire country, meaning that it then touch that the government has the minority community, you know, and that's trying to say, are we able to reach, if you check the platforms, people, whether those platforms, is it the entire country or is it specific African communities? Now that question then goes back to the individual that Mr. Swartz and Ms. Engeli was asking. It is quite clear, Mr. Swartz, that the majority of people in the program that government gives people related to transformation, service delivery and many, they might not be attractive to your middle class white community, even Indian community. Now the question is then whether does the individual have to be sector specific and targeting issues of other communities, because you might call them SNS and Wahoo, but it might not be that everybody will come. But that does not mean that the white community of Indian or colored community have got a problem. But it could just be that the method address might not be relevant today, those services concerned. That is that government communication is the method that we might want to address. The last point is related to the issue of the communication. Now we have said there's a lot of things that goes out from GTL, but it's very little in terms of a television program or radio in particular. Now radio covers the entire country, most of them. We would have wished if there could be a continuous engagement, either on radio, through a specific program, or a TV program. There was one program that GTL was running, but I think because of the program of SABC, it has came to an end. So one thing I thought we might want to look into, because in terms considering the literacy rate in South Africa, we could not assume that everybody is able to read books and journal, whether it's in other languages. But most times if the program can be on radio, and if the CEO would be able to just be on radio discussing government programs, that would be quite good. But I must say that generally the issues that we've raised in the past 3 years, they've been covered and captured, and of course some of the things remain challenged in terms of communication. I'm quite happy with the report. I'm sure that my members of course, members have also indicated their ideas. Thank you, Mr.
President. This is true in my opinion also. I think it's related to the question that Mr. Commando has raised. You see, the government communication must be a source of reliable, credible, and timely information. Very important. And once that credibility is established, the relationship with the media is very important. If they see you as a source of honest, upfront, accurate information. Now, once we get into political perspective, that's where the problem comes. Costco might be suggesting that those who are communicating to politicians, they should be a separate personality rather than the government. That's what he suggests. Well, as an institution, GCIS must be able to give information to everybody in impartial places. But I think that creating this line between information giving and political management, but political communication. I'd like to get a sense of what is the thinking of the GCIS, and what's your primary importance? The second issue for me also is I think it's given a number of study grants. I think about 40 students. Are those people then contracted to work and obligated to work for GAS for government communication on a fixed period, or do they repay those loans, etc.? I think we need to look at some clarity on that. It's important that we point to students. There must be some commitment and some plan of that to the GAS.
Okay. We'll share the questions among ourselves, but I would like to kick off with this question about the role of GCIS commandate, etc. By just explaining that, essentially what you're talking about is two jobs in one. Okay? One job is dissemination of information to the public, making sure that when people want to have access to government information, know what government is planning to do, etc., etc. Those are the core business of GCIS. But in the person of the CEO of the GCIS, there's also the government spokesperson job, which is actually a totally separate function, where you then do what you're telling political communication.
When we were talking about the review, I wish we had more time. We could have mentioned what we're trying to achieve there, because we think that where this model of communication, where the two functions are actually combined in one, and this system has served us fairly okay for 9 years. But we think that there's time for us to do a review to see what is the best model going forward. Is it to keep the two combined in one, or is it a separation? So we've got a team of researchers who will be investigating this matter for us. We're putting together a reference group, which will consist of experts in the field, media practitioners, etc., etc. People are going to be advising us on what the best model is. We're also looking at models in other parts of the world, because in many parts of the world, this function is separated. In others, it is actually combined. So the different models, what we need to choose is what is the best model for us in this country. What works? Because what we're finding, especially in the past 2 weeks or so, the government spokesperson task is actually taking quite a huge amount of time. If we want to look at the percentage of time where it has taken, I'll say, up to 70% of the time has been on the government spokesperson job because of the heat of the issues that we're dealing with. And that means that, in fact, the government, the core mandate function of GITA as a communication outfit, only got 30% of my attention over the past 3 weeks or so. So it is a tension that needs to be managed. But unless we agree on what is the best model for the country, based on research, based on extensive discussion and debate, I think that it may be premature to answer that question more convincingly in today's meeting. So let's do the review, and I think the executive ultimately is going to have to take a view on what becomes the best option for South Africa. The question on researchers, I'll ask David to tackle that one, in fact.
Thank you, sir. First, we do not do research ourselves because an institution can't conduct research themselves as a result it could be subjective. So GCI has commissioned master's research on communications research, which does look at distribution, looks at reach and access. So we definitely don't do research from. The second one is on Vukuzenzele. When we came with the recommendation and submitted to National Treasury on the funding model of the magazine for government, it was based on research. And it was a track question that had asked people representative of the population of the country with demographics that included deep rural, semi-urban, age groups from 18 to 65 plus, all racial groups. Continuous question that was asking whether would they prefer a government magazine. And quite consistently report outcomes of that research was saying yes to would. And we did quite an extensive analysis. I think it was presented in the portfolio committee of state some years ago. We did identify that about the majority of people in the lower elections, 1 to 3, were not receiving sufficient information, some were even cut off from any type of communication. As a result, that magazine was developed to target that particular group of people in the country. What we also did was extensive research on distribution strategies. As a result, the company that we then gave a tender to distribute the magazine is a company that has done an analysis and does quite different ways of penetration. It is the type of company that distributes your tech leaflets that you find in very remote areas in this country. I hasten to say that we are aware that Vukuzenzele cannot be the only platform, hence it is part of the many platforms that we are using as GCI. It is part of our multimedia campaign to reach the people in this country. And we also use it to reinforce information that is found in other areas. So it does actually carry some of the information that is carried elsewhere. We are very much aware that it may not necessarily be the increase of print runs that will help us reach the people. It could be how we use Vukuzenzele to reach more people because it's a durable magazine. so that when I have that magazine as Daily Kiawa, I don't keep it in my house, I get encouraged to share it. As a result, we have now shifted the part of the guidance of Google Zealot to do a radio advert that does say, if you have your Google Zealot magazine, make sure that you share it with your neighbor. And indeed, as members were talking about radio, which we know that does reach areas where some mainstream media doesn't reach it. So we also intensifying the reach by saying to people, here's a magazine that you can share and you have to share with other people. But I think it is important to say that we are finding ways and creative ways of making sure that it does reach other people. And we are also saying that it is part of the platform that we are definitely using. Coming to the next point that was raised, indeed we had a TV show, Azishekia, which was looking at opportunities created by government. Indeed, that program has come to an end, but we're beginning it again in January in partnership with public broadcaster. We are now converting some of the real stories of people who benefited from programs of government into radio. We're now in the process of, into the next year, when we come back to the committee, we will then present how we actually extended that into radio stations, all African language stations, including community radio stations. And in this sense, we're working within the economic cluster, but also including the BOC, which is part of the departments that are dealing with establishment of community radio stations. We are exploring and finding ways in which we can work and strengthen our work, of course, with the NDDA, and look at other programs that the NDDA is doing, which we can actually use possibly the platforms that they are growing. So, to your chair, it's a lot of work. It is a history of, it's a country that has had very few people getting information from government, and we think we're making progress, and we are aware of the challenge. I must also hasten to say through your chair, also, we do not think as a system, I think my CEO has referred to that, we do not think as a system that the 27 departments that have got head of communications are doing as much. And we think through our review, we shouldn't necessarily look at ourselves as GCI replacing those. We should actually be working with them because they're part of the system. So that in the platforms when you're communicating, they're also part of those platforms and also they are recipients of messages and programs of government. And we think our element or our area where we have to strengthen ourselves through this review is to see how we work quite effectively with other government communicators in the 27 departments who are part of the system to continue to expand the message and how it's reaching millions of people in this country. So to us, it's a long haul, but I think as the committee has acknowledged that there is progress that can only be supported by itself and given guidance by itself.
Okay, I think we've covered most of the questions. I'm worried about my colleagues from the
MDDA areas.
I am waiting for their presentation. But if there are any questions that we have not covered, could I have
them? The two from IPC, the vacancies, yes. Just to indicate that if you look in KwaZulu-Natal, all the GCIF offices are staffed. But the reason we mentioned earlier on that we wanted to make municipalities take ownership of the programs is exactly for this reason, because the center managers are coming from the municipalities and we want to encourage that. But I'm also, I think it's also important to indicate that KwaZulu-Natal now has taken the program so serious that there is so much progress that the province has done in terms of addressing some of the challenges. Remember earlier on I mentioned that we did the first generation review, what are the challenges, how to address it, and the like. And KwaZulu-Natal, and one of the processes in doing it is provincial offices, I mean provincial departments developing their provincial business plans. KwaZulu-Natal is much more advanced in terms of developing that, and they have seen these vacancies as one of the bigger challenges, and they are engaging districts and municipalities in terms of addressing that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. Then the study grants, this is a formal, I think it was presented here. It is a program that Unilever and Mandela Road Fund have actually funded to the GCI. These are government communicators, so they are already in our employ. So they definitely do come. Of course, we are also in the process of reviewing it. but because of finances, we can only afford to place that many people.
Thank you very much. I think we are half set for time. We've done quite well in 2 hours. It's really complex. Thank you very much for your attention. Generally, the sense of the perspective of the work that you did have. Well done, Chief. We're going to have a 2 minute stretch break while the NDA sets up.
Thank you.
Short presentation, take it as granted that members have read the report. We want to spend more time on the discussion. But I'm going to hand over to you to introduce yourself, and then you can give your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. As you can see, we have a bigger group this time because we have more than half of our board here. Most of the board members who are here, if I can just say that their term of office comes to an end at the end of the year. So we thought, you know, we should bring almost everyone to this presentation.
That's the case in the farewell party.
You share the information and the presentation. Thank you. I have with me, if I could just start with the board members, I have Chris Mosley, who still continues with the board. He stays on. We have Tony Chu, who also continues with the board. We have Dr. Mashilo Muluka, whose term of office comes to an end. Sherry Karinen next to me. My term of office, her term of office comes to an end. We also have in the management team, we have Lumko, who's our chief executive. He has with him Ms. Jayshree Pata, who's the project director. And we also have our chief finance officer, Ms. Jenny Jasta, who's also part of the team. We also have Mr. Mazibuko Jaka, Western Cape-based board member. His term of office continues because he was already appointed, I think, in the last year, so he stays on in the board. And myself, my term of office also comes to an end now at the end of this year. And I would also like to just take this opportunity to thank the board members for making time to be here, and just to thank them for the work they've done over the last 4 years. They've worked very hard. They've been very consistent in their contribution to the board, and they've worked tirelessly. And I would go to continue with the board a good next 3 to 5 years. And we'd also like to take this opportunity to thank the committee. We've received a lot of support from this committee. Some of the committee members who have been with us since the beginning. We've received a lot of feedback in the work that we do and where we're going wrong. We always get feedback and criticism where it's necessary. So we really do appreciate the feedback that we receive. The way we're going to handle the our presentation today, we have various people who are going to talk into the different sections of the presentation. We literally will summarize almost all of the areas. We thought we should go into the background, seeing that they are, including yourself, some new committee members. So we'll just very briefly go into the background and what we stand for as the NDDA. Kelly Kalinet will start with the background as to
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to go very fast through the beginning because I'm just putting the bones in. The others are going to add the meat. The background, this is the legislation that governs us. We're basically responsible for promoting media development and diversity. We provide money, but we also provide other support. The other support is mostly mentoring and feasibility studies. So we're not just throwing money at the sector, but making sure that the money that goes there is going to be well spent. We cover all media. And we particularly are trying to grow the media industry so that people who have never had any opportunities before, historically disadvantaged communities and individuals, can be not only consumers and producers, but also owners and managers of the media. This is just from the NDDA Act. Interested in creating an enabling environment.
We were raising exclusion and marginalization of disadvantaged communities and people from access to the media industry. We cover communities mostly, but also small commercial media projects. So we're hoping that those knock and drops that the DCIA says people like to get information from, we're hoping that we're going to get a whole lot of adverts for our people from DCIA too. That is our mandate in a nutshell, enabling environments that also encourages public discourse and reflects the needs and aspirations of South Africans. So in other words, lots of different kinds of media for different kinds of people. That's our vision. Everybody should have access to a wide choice of media. And that's our mission. We're a development agency, so we're not just a funding agency. We take the development part very seriously. We are aware that there has been money put into community media in the past, which hasn't necessarily worked that well. So we are very certain to, sometimes we go a little bit slower than people would like, but we want to make sure that the products that, the projects that we start or assist are going to survive. So the objects of the NDVA set up in the Act. Ownership and control, and particularly promoting media in indigenous languages and promoting cultural groups that have not been represented or had a voice in the media. Development of human resources and encouraging resources, channeling resources to these sectors, not necessarily from us, but from other organizations. It's a continuation of our objectives. Also raising public awareness about media development and diversity, promoting literacy, encouraging research, and liaising with the other statutory bodies in the sector. Corporate governance, as Kanye said, we're governed by a board. I have to say that the board has been very strong and united. We're quite a diverse group of people, ideologically, but I think we've worked extremely well together, and we've had exceptional leadership from our chairperson. So I'd like to thank her for that, because I think we haven't had any kinds of problems. And I'm a journalist, by the way, so according to Mr. Maseko's analysis, I should be looking for bad news, but there isn't any bad news to report. Our money, we get money from Parliament, so thank you very much. We get money from various agreements. We're also expecting money, or we will be getting money from the Electronics Communication Act of 2005, contributions from the Broadcasting Service licensees, not exceeding 1% of the annual turnover. We're envisaging that money will come through in July 2008. And we're not quite sure exactly how that will come through and how much money it will be, because it still has to, the amount still has to be. Thanks. I'm going to hand over to Lumko.
Thank you, and Kelly. Like I said, I've been asked to take you through the deliverables in terms of our work. And firstly, I'll start by talking to just the application. We have, since 2004, received applications worth 190 million. And our income since inception is about 53. Some applications have been refused because of a number of reasons. Either they are not yet licensed, or there is incomplete information in the application, i.e. business plan and so forth. And those without such information, we then assist them through a mentoring program and give them an opportunity to come back to us. This far, we have the following milestones. First and foremost is that living agreements funding agreement from SABC, Kahiso, MNET, Prime Media, Jonik, Independent Newspapers, Media 24, and CAC Team. These are continuing for a 5-year period, which therefore expires in the financial year 2008 and 9. 2006 was the end of the first 3 years of our funding work. And second, again, we also have a clean, unqualified audit report from the AG. We have supported about 135 different projects with approximately 45 million in grants approved for disbursement since January 2004. In the year under review, 44 projects were supported with just more than 24 million in grant approved for disbursement. Media projects supported are located in every province. Just a snapshot of some of the projects we support. You can see there in Mpumalanga, there is Northern Cape, there is Gauteng, there is KZN, remember the mark. There is also another publication from KZN, and just to capture one of the comments from the beneficiary, that the funding has been to their benefit has helped them through their work. Also another comment from Janine Magazine in KZN, which that's a comment in a newspaper in KZN which publishes in Zulu. They basically thank the MDA for the support they have received. Of the supported projects, just more than 23 are new and did not exist prior to MDDA intervention. A report last year, which was generated from SARS, indicated that the listenership of community radio has increased significantly, with community radio accounting for just over 20% of the total radio audience. We have provided more than 41 different media managers with bursaries since January 2004, and in the year under review, 6 bursaries were provided to 6 projects. We have provided mentorship support to a number of projects, and again, that is just a snapshot of the institutions we worked with in terms of those training support. Like Institute and the Road University. And this is a comment that comes from the director of Solfati University, who says that he writes to express the institution's deep gratitude for the financial support that MDJ gave to community media editors and managers who participated in the Centers of Management talk. Of note is that all these participants also urge the MDA to continue to fund media workers and community media to attend professional courses to upgrade their skills and knowledge, especially in essentials of newspaper management. We also have developed a database of grassroots organizations in partnership with the Association of Independent Publishers of South Africa. We have funded media presenting women, children, people with disabilities, the elderly, in media, again, different issues. We, in the year under review, we completed research work done into challenges facing community and small commercial media. We have deliberated on these reports and have had discussions with stakeholders discussing these reports. Some of the findings have informed our strategic planning in the next MTF. And that's a list of these researches that we did, and they are available on our website. In the year under review, we have improved the quality of treatment for submissions to the board significantly, and this has had a huge difference in respect of increasing the amount and number of projects approved by the board it has helped the work of the board in terms of the resources they have in terms of decision making. And the next bullet point just illustrates in real terms what has happened, which illustrates the improved decision making reflects to grant. Here we have planned to measure our impact in terms of access to media in the different city municipalities. So what we have done to plan to like say what are we doing in the different city municipalities, and this graph just shows the interventions in terms of projects in the different city municipalities. And here this just shows the approval, the amount spent in terms of the different categories. We have regulations that prescribe how much should be spent in what sector. So you can see that the spend has been spread into the different sectors in accordance with the regulations. Here, this is a breakdown of projects approved per province. And we are concerned that some provinces, like your Northwest, your Free State, are behind in terms of projects. And we do take an approach of going out there, work with CCIS, CQALG, DOC and other community initiatives in those provinces where there isn't much work, in order to facilitate and encourage more projects. And this slide just shows the percentage of existing projects versus emerging projects. And this one shows you the amount versus the amount approved versus the requested amount in the financial year under review. And here again, this is just an illustration of the breakdown of amount in percentage form per sector. A lot of money spent on community broadcasting and community print as per the regulations, and then small commercial and research and training. In terms of our capacity, we are just a team of 13, and the three of us joined the agency last year, myself, the financial officer, and the project director. Chairperson, we inherited an organization that is having procedures and systems in place. All we had to do was to review those accordingly, align them with the legislative, current legislative framework, and also accommodate growth and improve on those policies in order to be able to deliver on our mandate. We have also corrected an observation that I'm upstanding a question that may arise from the members in respect of the performance measurement, that the AG has made an observation in terms of us assisting him, assisting AG in terms of auditing performance information. And we have already responded in that regard and developed a template that that is aligned to the requirements in terms of federal regulations, and it enables us to right through the financial year and make sure that we measure ourselves, and therefore the work of the AG in this financial year should be easy in this regard. Accordingly, our strat plans, objectives, outputs, and measurable objectives are aligned with the allocated budget. This is just an illustration of the capacity we have. We can see that we are a really small staff, because our regulations imposes that we between administration, so that most money is spent in the project. I will now hand over to the CFO to take us through the figures.
studying inheritance or you're trying to start a union.
Thanks, Jefferson, and thanks to our CEO and my honorable board members and the honorable committee members. I'll go quickly through the financial side of things. We receive mainly our funding basically from three sources: the government, which is CIS, and then we receive 9.6 for the year, that is past 2006-07. Then we, in total, we received 4.8 million from Game Partner, and also 5.2 million from Broadcast Partner. And then we also received some other income, that is classified other income to the amount of 7,000. And then also some interest amounting to 2.6 million from the investment. And then in total we got 22.4 million for the first 9 years. Maybe as the CEO has alluded to, we received money from those partners mentioned there under Green Funders Independent Newspaper, Johnny 24, Casting, and the Broadcast Partners, ETV, Gasco Broadcasting, MNET, Prime Media, and then the SABC. The expenditure for the year under review 2006-07, 24 million relates to the grant cost, and then 3 million to the personal cost, administration account for 3 million as well, and then depreciation 221,000, and then the total expenditure was 30.8 million for the period under review. And then it's just the breakdown of the element of the income statement. The total administration cost for that period amounted to 3.3 million, excluding depreciation. And then the, including depreciation, my apologies. And then the total administration cost, excluding depreciation, was 3.1 million. And then the expenditure for that, so the technical expenditure for that period was 3 million, and then the training expenditure of cost relating to that period was only 67,000. Administration is a cost or the percentage of the total income, which includes the personal cost, but it's 5%. And then the personal cost as a percentage of total income was 13.7%. And then the training cost as a percentage of the total cost was 0.25%. The split between the overspending between the various sectors was as follows. Community print was 6.3 million, which translates to 26%. Community radio was 10.8, which translates to 45%. And then small commercial media is 5 million, which accounts for 21%. And then on the stage, there was no expenditure. Since there was some, so please know that there were no research programs approved for that year, the financial year. And then other expenditure went to another project that I don't specifically defined here, which accounts for 2 million, which is 8%. And the total revenue, that's a synopsis of what was then. It's basically total revenue of 32.4, so the expenditure 8.8, and then we realize a profit of 8.3 million. And then also I'll cover that part as well in the first slide, that we received 11.9. For the current year. Where we are now. We received 11.9 from government, which is CIS, and then we also received 5.3 from broadcasting and 4.8 from
5 months. Our challenge is for the current year, under review, is that NGAs will need to discuss and their funding estimate requirements. We should divide the funds between small commercial, community, and state sector. And in these funding estimates, must be divided between the print and the broadcast. And then the funding estimates also specify that no more than 10% of administration in the state should be used. And then funding is on different cycles. Our funding, so our financial year ends in the 31st, while the our funders cycle is different from our financial year, which holds a different dimension to our funding. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, this year marks the 5th year since the first board of the NDA was appointed, and probably the 4th year since it was operationalized. And in view of our trying to reflect some of the work that it carried out and some of the challenges that facing those in the last couple of years, we should be looking at what are the opportunities for growth that we need to consider as we think about the work of the MDGA moving forward. And this is what I'm going to present on. If you look at the first opportunity that is coming, we will see out of the increasing funding as a result of the Section 89 of the Electronic Communications Act. In other words, it will replace, if you look at that section, what it does is set the maximum that can be contributed to the MDA, and that further replaces the existing voluntary mechanisms that we have with the funders. Therefore, to a large degree, to increase on the funding for the MDA. And secondly, the growth arising from the new license program, for us, this is quite interesting and quite challenging in the sense that if you look at the last couple of years, the last couple of months, there are about seven new players coming onto the market. On the radio side, we've got about 3 commercial radio stations that have been licensed in the provinces of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. And then you further add the newly licensed 4 subscription television providers, excluding MultiChoice, which is not new. Therefore, that increased the number of funders as well. And I mean, these are largely with the exception of ESAT. Most of them are entirely new players into the market. Therefore, that increased the size of contributors. And furthermore, if you look at the regulations, or the ECA as a whole, what it does is that it provides 2 window period for community broadcasters to apply. Therefore, that means the demand for the MDA will increase. The only challenge is that demand will be able to meet the demand given the limited funding that we have. And furthermore, and then soon there will be, you know, the process to license community television. For us, this is a huge challenge again, because if you further, like I said, raise or increase the demand for the MDA service, but the mere fact that maybe there are challenges, I think as the financial or as the CEO talked about earlier or alluded to earlier, if you try to compare the amount of applications that we receive in monetary terms, 84 versus 24 million, you can see that there's high demand, but in terms of the funding that we can meet, it's not enough here. And on the community television side, I think the other challenge is if you look at the licenses at the moment, most of them, actually the one that's currently on air is temporary. So we hope that in the future it can be licensed, long-term license, so that there can be investment into the sector. And the about those 400 licensed publications across South Africa. And then furthermore, new applications are received by the agents. I think this is really showing that South Africa is in a good course as far as diversity is concerned. If you try to compare us with other countries, I think we're doing quite well. And probably the mere fact that we've got over 100 community licenses onto the market, And over 400 subcutters publications, we are really on the path to a real diversity of media in the country. And then, like I said, the mere fact that we continue to get a lot of applications, and on the other hand, the money that can disperse in a single year is quite limited. So that's it shows that we the demand for the MDA service is moving to the future. And then we have as well analyzed the implication that the Electronic Communications Act has on the agency. And to this end, we have held a joint workshop with the National Television Access Agency. This is in view of the broadcasting, the Electronic Communications Act, which further incorporates broadcasting into the mandate of USARCA. Therefore, we are trying to look at what are areas of cooperation so that we don't have to duplicate our services. And we yesterday we had a very fruitful workshop where in which the broadcasters, who are our major funders, were invited onto a roundtable to discuss the implications of this. And obviously, the tone that we could understand is that probably in view of that section 89, especially around the dual contribution towards both the MDDA and USASA, there has to be more work done around the USASA Services Agency, especially in terms of promoting to the broadcasters, because over the years they had a very good relationship with the MDDA, and they would love to see that relationship continue moving forward. And then these are some of the 2007, and as we move forward to say, these are some of the highlights. And then we want to continue to build credibility with grassroots media. This is very, very important. If you look at South Africa, as much as there are so many grassroots publications, as I referred to earlier, there's still allegiance towards mainstream media, both in print as well as radio. And we want to change that. And I think for us that will increase the leadership and therefore further consolidating the kind of work that the MDA is doing. And furthermore, to deal with advertising challenges so that this sector as well can be sustainable. As we are aware, this sector, the future sustainability of this sector relies heavily on advertising. And as we are aware, when this kind of sector or when this kind of media enter the market, they are always faced with a cold reception from the advertisers. They have got this historical dimension as well. And we have noticed that in community radio as well, in which people often shun projects that are new onto the market. I think we had an advertising market workshop to kind of profile the sector as well as to kind of present the sector to the advertisers so that they've got the nuances and the intention. Because for us really, their contribution or the coming on board of advertising market sector is not necessarily a commercial. It shouldn't just be viewed in commercial terms. We should view this as CSI, corporate social investment, where in which these advertisers are building a kind of plowing back into their communities. And together with the sector, we hope especially print, to further develop strategies around printing and distribution. These are some of the initiatives that we've taken in realizing this. And then furthermore, develop approaches around the support of community television. And then we had a summit on the 2nd and 4th April 2007, I think it was held in KZN. There are various initiatives over the country. At the moment, the one that's fully operational is Soweto, and we hope the new ones that are being mooted in the provinces of Western Cape and Limpopo will come to fruition quite soon. Moving forward, we hope to promote and strengthen the small commercial print and community. Our vision is that at least there should be one community radio per district, and we are doing as much as possible together with the DOC to kind of see that this vision is realized. Because we have noticed that if you look at the distribution of some of this special community radio is in provinces where there's that limited, where they just don't know how of establishing this. Therefore, we hope this will assist them so that, all the communities, there shouldn't be any community without a media of their choice. Therefore, it's it's our vision that at least there should be one community radio per district municipality which we fund, and one community newspaper that we fund as well, and one community television per province. The reason why we are not ambitious at all about community television is because it's a high capital intensive project, therefore you don't want a lot of them. And again, there are a lot of there are issues of frequencies for community television. So in contrast with radio, which I think you can dream bigger and become ambitious, I think we just want to focus one. I think can be, if we can achieve that, that would be a phenomenal achievement on our part. And then one media cooperative per district funded, and then the feasibility study on the viability of such a cooperative as well. And then one half the province. I think the whole idea of the half is to try and build capacity for the sector as a whole. If you look at it, we are in Johannesburg, and most of the projects that we fund are scattered throughout the province, whether in urban areas or whether in rural areas. Therefore, you know, that relationship or somebody, we need someone who can build or a structure or a facility that will be able to build capacity in the sector and conduct, whether training, whether workshops, and look at the needs of the sector. And so that's why we feel that there should be a hub that will provide that capacity, both from print and radio. Yes, quickly, I think that we are also supporting this kind of project.
Just to conclude, Chair, the challenges that are faced by the NDA have been stated here before, the capacity of the sector to absorb all of the funding. Because of the developmental nature of the work that we do, we need to do more interventions before we disperse the grant to every project, most of the projects that we fund. And we're also aware that not all of the projects that we fund will be able to sustain themselves without external intervention. So that's one thing that we're looking at continuously. The diversification of languages is also a key issue for us. So we keep on looking at ways and trying to ensure that all languages are covered. The issue of programming that doesn't serve communities is an issue that we are faced with at every step of the way. And obviously, what we want to be judged by, and as my colleagues have been presented so far, we want to be judged according to the amount of work that we do in every district municipality in the country. If we have no radio station, no newspaper in some districts, and no television, community television in some provinces, that's the measurement of our success. If it doesn't exist, then we haven't succeeded. If we don't have diversity in terms of languages, then we have not succeeded. That's the major focus of our work going forward. And again, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone, especially the board and the management team. I'd like to also mention CISIA for the continuous ongoing support that they give us, including the use of their resources that is very supportive to us and the NDA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair President. I would like to thank the NDA, and I'll leave that to you, Chair President, because of the off time. I'll quickly go through my questions. The very first question on your annual report, page 56, which talks to us about project tracking system. Can you please tell us more about this project tracking scheme, and can you also tell us if we have any special projects on this? And can you explain also the rollover of funds for this project tracking, as we have mentioned there on the rollover? That's the second question. The other question is that four of your board members, 10, is coming to an end. What is your handover strategy? If you have been on page 9, although you have unqualified support, but but the AG Federal Fund SEO, so this intent is not input measure of objects in relation to the payment objective for the same purpose. Can you explain this issue? On page 7, you say you have already know and they are protecting it. What strategies do you have in place? In other sectors of communication, our staff have been pushed by other media. Do you have any plan to retain our staff, seeing that they are already have morale, low morale? Then, if you could further tell us about your non-adherence to your code of conduct, we have reported from they are not declaring their interest, it appears in and then why you didn't allocate anything this year for on the for special to allocate 5%. On the same page 7, while we have the content of non-compliance with PFMA, can you please expand on all the general of the question appears on page 7 of your thank you.
Thank you very much. So, well, let me start on 57, because I also have it. I mean, this is your risk assessment, the way I see it, and there's some high risks. Our colleague there mentioned the low, the medium risks, but I mean, also, they also need to be addressed. Chair, this in conjunction with the audit findings on 69 about the lack of measurable outputs, actually I was planning, and you must rule in this regard, I was planning to make remarks about this and then say I hope, and I trust that come our next interaction where strategic plans and budgets get discussed, not on the reports of the past, that you'll get proper answers to those two questions. In other words, what measurable objects have been put in place already during this financial year we're sitting in at the moment, and also, of course, in which way you're addressing your various risks. You must really this time if you want it answered today. I thought it would be more at a later engagement, we have more sufficient time because there's quite a lot of things to look at as far as that goes. My only question, Chair, is when I look at it, it's a deficit for the year. I was glad to see on page 82 that all GCIS funds were spent on the 31st of March. I mean, those are the taxpayers' money, those are the things that we budget and that we allocate to somebody and that we spend it in time. I also understand the difficulty in getting income mid-year, November, and be committed or not be sufficiently committed. Then you have surpluses, accumulate surpluses, or a deficit in this year. I just want a bit more explanation as to how this works. Maybe I'm just very stupid, Chair, but I just want to understand. I mean, you finished up 2006 financial year with an accumulated surplus of 15.6 million. That thing gets spent in the next year, overspent to such an extent that you end this one under discussion, the 2007 year. You finish that with a deficit. Well, you overspent 8.37, that's a deficit. But you still ended the year with a accumulated surplus of 7.3. I just want to know if I understand this correctly, and why is there then the need to indicate a deficit for the year if you don't actually close up at the end of last year and end of this year, like we would see with the government departments, with only source of income would be budgets. Just some explanation. I don't see a link explanation. Just the way of reporting it is a bit difficult for me to understand, Chair. Thanks.
Let me take the opportunity and thank the outgoing board members. I've been with them for a while. I think they did brilliantly under difficult circumstances. I think it's also because we were supported by a good overall team. Coming from my side, thank you very much. I've always been saying people working in these boards are doing community service. There come a time that they need to leave their community service and go and work for themselves. Can I come back just to one particular question? There seems to be, particularly Lincoln Kim, he helps a lot in terms of my constituency in Cape Town Television. People can call on him for advice.
from his ICASA role or his current role, he also getting a salary and radio license in the community. So thank you very much for that. There seems to be an over concentration on electronic communication. And we don't seem to make much headway in community friendly community places. Particularly in Western Cape, hundreds of other provinces. If it's true, do you have any plans to try and arrest that? Because we've seen the bigger papers for saying that they're doing a community paper, for example, belonging to not fair and whatever. Doing, but we understand the kind of community friend that you need. We don't seem to be making, to be very successful in that. Do you have any plans to break that?
Thanks. Maybe let me start with the question from another member. The first question related to the presentation system. We have installed the system, it's in place, and it's working very well. It helps us to make sure that we're running a smooth operation. The referred rollover there was in terms of the funds that were allocated for purchasing that infrastructure, but it was subsequently and then in terms of the handover strategies, the board term expires, I think, January, end of January, and we're hoping as soon as Parliament and the President appoints, we're hoping then to be able to have a handover process with the new board. I'm not sure that the chair wants to make the announcement for the 6th of September, so I didn't then in terms of the performance of information audit findings, as I already indicated in the presentation, this was because AG, this was the first year, as Member Master also mentioned earlier, so the first year of audit of performance information. And as such, we were trying to work together in terms of the expectations of AG, and they have now shown us what is their expectations, and we have already complied with their expectations in terms of this financial year. Mm-hmm. But with respect to previous financial year, the year under review, they had made these findings, and we have already addressed that in terms of the financial year. You can also see from page 52, 53 up to 55, that our planning going forward is very measurable, so as to be able to deal with, in particular, that kind of requirement in terms of federal regulation. With respect to staffing, we have confronted the staffing challenges. We have done organization climate survey. We have evaluated the job, and we have outcomes that have identified areas where we need intervention. And we're hoping that going forward, the staffing staff is settled. I can safely say staff has already in this year going forward has already said they are fine with the climate, and we don't foresee staffing challenges, except of course in terms of the remuneration, the questions of whether we compete with the market, whether we're comparable to the market. Those are questions that are ongoing, and we're hoping as we grow, we'll be able to meet some of those kind of questions. The questions you raised in respect of risk management, page 57 is just an outline of risk. It doesn't mean we have not complied with the code. It doesn't mean we have not done all those traffic identification of areas, and it doesn't mean we've not complied with PFMA. It just means these are the areas that we always need in our management to make sure that we manage so that we don't fall in terms of this area. And the next page, from 58 to 59, it shows you the action plan to mitigate those risks. And those are the activities outlined there in the third column, which shows what we do in respect of making sure that we never not comply with the requirements in terms of the regulations and the law. And as you can see from the audit findings and the audit report that we have complied, there isn't any finding against us except for the observation with respect to supplement information. In respect of research, I'm not sure that Heather wants any background.
Why wasn't last year we did not commission any research? We have funding to do research internally as well as externally. Last year we were completing the research that had been approved in the previous year, so that's why we did not allocate any funds or initiate any new research in the financial year reporting. It doesn't mean that we do not spend. Research is also combined with training in our budget. So if the money was not used for research, it was really used for training and development.
The questions from Member Smart, sorry, Member Smart, my apologies.
thanks for compliment.
the risk question, I think I've already answered it because it's the same question from Member Smart. I'll leave the deficit question to the CFO to clarify. I'll answer the last question from Member Hayden. We have looked at the challenges faced by the print media. In particular, they range from the printing challenges, the distribution challenges, and as such, you can see in our strategy going forward that we're hoping to build capacity and look at how we mitigate the printing and distribution challenges, and look at the question of hubs and establishment of hubs. Already in the Western Cape, we have had initiatives and meetings with the sector in the Western Cape and also in the Eastern Cape. We're hoping that together we'll be able to then have strategies going forward in terms of strengthening and ensuring that communities do have community and safe. But it remains, yes, a challenge and that we accept. But at least in terms of the regulation and the compliance thereof, we have distributed the money in accordance with the framework provided in the regulation, and therefore spent accordingly in terms of community print and projects. Yes.
Chair, I quickly explain that the deficit that is in our budget here. How does that lead to finish that we work on the actual basis of accounting, which means we recognize any event or any effective transaction to say, okay, it doesn't have to be money received or actually paid. How's that on that sense? So the 8 million expected though is not really a deficit, because what happened in the 2006-2007 financial year, the approval, as you can see that the approval was 24 million, and then we had an income of 70 million. So that doesn't translate to the fact that we've actually paid that amount. Once the board approves the project, that has become the commitment. That means we raise it as a corporate in a typical retail or kind of business. So it's not just the amount that was actually paid over to the project. And the nature of our business or operation or accounting is such like that we sit there and in transit, you know, that extend or overlap to the other financial year. And then some projects that are approved, especially over periods of
years, not just only from the financial years under consideration or under review. But that's the nature of the strategy. That it's not really that we had spent 8 million in this financial year that we are reporting over and above what we had in our pocket. And then I think the other committee member asked the logic around the statement of changes in net assets. I think the question was, we had an opening balance on the start up for the period of 15 million and then suddenly we changed to the cumulative effect. So we, every year, we add to the cumulative figure to the financial year.
You look at the cross system with fund and understand how it's going on. Yeah.
Thanks, sir. I have a small addition in response to the question about allocation for the patch. Just to say that the approach that the agency has taken on research and related research to output that the agency has identified in terms of its mandate. For example, in the coming period, there are two major research projects that will increase the allocation for research in that period. The one is going to have to help us as the agency about to what extent can we really play the role with regard to providing low interest loans as mandated by the law. So for example, that is going to be some significant research engaging with financial institutions, private and public, and that will therefore boost the amount allocated to the research. Similarly, the presentation makes reference to research which has to be done with regards to the viability and feasibility of the cooperative model, given that strategic plan commitment to establish at least 1 million cooperatives the distribution of money. So I think those two examples illustrate what our approach has been up to now. That it was not just commission research because of the budget item, but we think to relate it to specific outcomes and for the money. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, just quickly on the handover strategy. Out of the 9 members, 4 of those that are exiting at the moment, there are about 5 to be exact, that have been serving the MDA, and 3 of those have started in the MDA in 2002 when they were appointed, which means in terms of continuity, it guarantees that. And we are hoping that prior to our exit, final exit in January, at least we hope that the new board members would have been appointed and probably will have a post-berat or a meeting with them to kind of take them through the process and bring in and attempt to kind of pass the page into them.
Any further questions?
Sir, another question. Sir, there was an issue that the CEO raised about, I don't know if that was a machine or the CEO, about whether they are paid enough in terms of the market or not. I mean, whether you are. You are playing with weight, you know, quite the MDDA, the government money, or the little money. The staff, the management, the board, and the pay, there's no one board member, the board member is an 82 like serving for the board meeting compared to others. I mean, really, I'm just saying, this is a matter we've raised before, we spoke to GTI, we spoke to the department. If you ask your chief chairperson, the board wants to be in terms of radio station, diversity development, we could never give that to this small part of the MBTA checking. I mean, in the fact, we all agree that the Portfolio Committee, we've raised this before, we are doing it again, and we'll do it. It is not about you will not retain, good staff members with that amount of money that you are paying them. But if so, there's not going to happen. No CEO is getting less than a DDG level of late in terms of what has been happening. So don't ask questions of whether there is a debate or there's no debate.
The money is different.
want to know if you are there any requirements or preconditions that you put forward to the, before you give this fund to the community, community print media. Do you check the quantity of the news or whatever that they are writing? The paper here that is called Voice Randy, you know about it. The Voice, is it from Mitchell State?
No, that's a tabloid.
No. Okay.
They don't look at tabloid. No, we got to look. She can talk about tabloid in the paper, right? She makes Voice and Gospel.
No, it's fine. Okay. In any case, it's outside.
Can you make this last question?
This is a very, very serious question, but I think it's important. I could hear on your report that you have realized that there's lack of diverse media in some areas, especially the rural. But I don't hear anything about what the MGPA is from the test is in the plan.
Thank you, Chief. The one project that we highlight that we are capable is a magazine that targets the disability text. So that's one project that we have. That's been the main area. We are looking at how to continue to provide support. In fact, the research that we looked at that was done by Stellenbosch University was looking at underserved and under-resourced communities and the issue of disability came up. We're now in the process of analyzing that research and looking at what additional support we can provide. That's been something that remains on our agenda as we continue.
Honourable Member, in our strategy going forward, we have outlined our priority areas, i.e., for example, that we're going to be prioritizing support for projects other than projects coming from Gauteng and Western Cape. Not that we exclude those, but we try to prioritize so as to ensure that we reach the diversity requirements in terms of the law. Similarly, in terms of the indigenous languages, we are next in that regard. But remember, MGPA responds to applications as much as it also does go reach out to try and assist the development of media. Similarly, in the area of disability, I think before, when you're discussing with CIS, the question was raised in terms of the blind, further investment in terms of that area. We're hoping to be able to respond and support those projects going forward, but we're also hoping to promote the awareness, the media awareness out there, so as to be able to then support when that has arisen.
Question from you, Ms. Engel.
We responded to this.
Okay, fine. It's half past one. I think we've got half an hour for lunch.
Alright, lunch has been arranged, so everybody that's present is invited to share with us. It's in the restaurant right next to this room here. Thank you very much both to GCIS and MDDA for the time that you've given us and for the questions that you've answered. We're going to be meeting at 3:10 in room B, 454 in the Old Assembly. I'm asking members to be prompt
before that, I think the House is adjourned around about 3. Then we go straight to the committee meeting. Thank you very much. And,
Chair, we need a quorum for that meeting to start in the short list. So, yeah.
Yes, yes. So everybody should be present. Thank you very much. Thank you.